Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 7th. I thought I would kick off with Alibaba because it has popped back above that psychological $150 level, and as of right now, it is sitting on an upside weekly key reversal. So that's of course assuming that it can hold on to this advance through the close tomorrow, and considering that the price has halved in the space of a year, then it's perhaps not before time that some of these Chinese tech stocks start to catch a break. But perhaps more important than that is that the relationship between the USA and China appears to be thawing. Quite whether it is wide open and friendly again, that's another story entirely, but thawing I think would probably be an accurate term, and not least after the release of Huawei's CFO, and or at least in Canada. So there's then of course there's the potential for a voice call or a video call between President Biden and President Xi later this year. So that's why the Chinese market's starting to perk up. And we've also seen that the Hang Seng has started to do better. But I thought it was interesting too that Baidu is also doing better in here today. And it has fallen even more than Alibaba has, but it's certainly firming from around this $150 area as well. So when we look at the constituents of the FANG index, well, it's the perhaps more accurately, it is the NYSE FANG Plus index, and it was those two Chinese shares were the leading advancers in here today. Facebook remains under pressure, and for good reason. There's a lot of uncertainty about its fate following the whistleblower allegations that have been made and the testimony in front of Congress yesterday. But when we then go back and look at what's going on in Asia, well, the H-share index has been ranging for a decade, and we're not all that far away from the lower side of the range, so it's a natural area where we might anticipate some support coming back in. I remain very much of the view that China is more a trader's market now from a stock market perspective, and that would suggest that we're at the lower side of the range, so there's the potential that we might have a run back up towards the upper side of the range, but there isn't a great argument for anticipating trending activity in the near term. But of course, we have been going sideways for an awfully long time. So keeping an eye out for some form of bullish catalyst might not be time misspent. It's just that there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence that that catalyst has been found right now. The other market in Asia that I think is interesting right now is South Korea, because generally, people tend to pay attention to the G10, and South Korea is the 11th largest economy in the world, and the index broke downwards. Now, Samsung is far and away the big heavyweight in this index, and Samsung Electronics today announced that they're going to be ramping up production of 3-nanometer chips next year, and they'll be starting off production of 2-nanometer chips. So those are pretty small, and one would think that that's good news, but Samsung didn't rally to any measurable extent in here today, and this is a notable breakdown. So what I find interesting is that there has certainly been some deterioration in shares like Samsung and Taiwan Semiconductor that have not translated into weakness in other portions of the market, and most particularly the US companies. So Taiwan Semiconductor is right at the lower side of its range, and at least giving initial evidence of finding some support. Nvidia, on the other hand, has continued to push on the upside, and its dominance of the graphics card sector is certainly the reason for that. So we continue to see that the broad large cap or mega cap, to be more accurate, sector is still trending higher, and Apple is giving initial evidence of support in the region of the trend mean and the upper side of its underlying range. Microsoft is also still really quite firm. But then we can think about the kinds of assets that should do well from an inflationary environment, because the financial sector spider pushed on to a new high in here today. It didn't quite close at the new high, but this does look like the completion of a multi-month range, and this ETF we have sufficient back history to go back at least a decade for. So it's broken out of what's been a very lengthy period of consolidation. One thing that I think is quite interesting is the performance of the KBW Nasdaq Global Bank Index, and that's been in a base formation for a decade, and it's firming from the region of the trend mean, and it's looking more encouraging than it has done for quite some time. It did race to get back up to the upper side and test that 1,000 level from the lows in early 2020, and has spent the last 6 months going sideways. But if we're in an inflationary environment, then it's likely that banks should do well. So, for example, in here today we saw Poland raising interest rates, but that was, I think, reasonably expected that Poland would raise interest rates, and it did help to lend some support to the zloty so that it's holding that four level. It hasn't broken below it yet, or the dollar hasn't broken up and through it. But it was what they had to say afterwards, is that they're going to have a good long pause, and that seems to be the prevailing attitude, that central banks, they do go ahead and raise rates once, but then they tend to announce that they're going to have a good long pause and figure out what happens next. So then the market is beginning to price in that the UK will raise rates twice next year. We have the potential, at least, that that should lend some support to the pound. Some of the inflationary pressures from energy are starting to abate. We had additional downward pressure on natural gas prices today, but it was off the low, and we are probably still in for a volatile period of trading overall. But certainly, Europe is a lot more dependent on Russian natural gas than they would like to admit, and that's likely to continue to be nailed into people's consciousness as we come up towards the winter. And I think, you know, the green advocates are going to be praying for a warm winter. The one thing that I think is particularly relevant that hasn't seemed to enter the calculus for people at all is that if you really do believe in climate change, pinning your hopes on energy sources that rely on the climate doesn't sound like particularly good advice. Because if the climate does change, well, the same amount of solar radiation will still be hitting the Earth. But if the winds change, then that's going to have an effect on wind-generated electricity. If the slipstream and changes, then it's going to affect cloud cover. So then if one is a believer in climate change, or at least at the minimum climate volatility increases, well then pinning one's hopes on the climate remaining constant to justify investments in renewable energy while also believing that the climate is going to change, well, that it doesn't make logical sense. But obviously that's not something that anyone's really willing to talk about right now. So when we think about the the solar sector and the wind sector, there's just no getting around the fact that in order to for them to meet base load, significant additional investments need to be made in energy storage. And traditionally, energy storage has been dependent on hydropower and pumping water uphill. And if you are again a believer in climate change and potentially that rains won't fall in the same place as they have done in the past, well then that doesn't look like a particularly reliable source of storage either. So then of course we're looking at batteries and the lithium sector, or the lithium price at least, continues to ramp higher. And the lithium companies had pulled back over most of the last 3 weeks, but they were also firmer in here today. The copper price continues to steady from the lower side of its range. And generally speaking, in an inflationary environment, well, then commodities should do well. I remain very much of the view that this is a copper-led bull market. And the last big bull market was about oil and iron ore. And on this occasion, it's much more about copper and lithium. So those are likely to be the sectors that do best. So I think it wasn't rather notable that one of the best performing shares on Wall Street today was Freeport-McMoRan, and it's bouncing in an emphatic fashion from the region of the trend mean at present. The 5-year yield in the US is again pushing up and through the 1% level. So the last time it did that, we had a pause and some increase in volatility on Wall Street. And on this occasion, the stock market rallied as bond yields have come back. And part of the reason for that is because of less uncertainty about the debt ceiling, although I think realistically, did anyone really believe that this conundrum wasn't going to be solved? But nonetheless, we did have an environment today where stocks rallied and bond yields also increased. And we are seeing this also contribute to the yield curve spread starting to push higher once more. Well, it hasn't pushed higher in such an abrupt fashion to arouse a lot of angst just yet. But one thing that we should be aware of is that, generally speaking, when the yield curve spread starts to trend through 150 basis points, that has generally corresponded with some of the most acute selling pressure during bear markets. So one would have to then bet that this occasion is different, that we've already had the big decline, that we're still in the abundant liquidity phase of this recovery, and that is going to last a while longer, and that inflationary pressures are going to be let to run wild. And I think that there is the real possibility that what we're in fact looking at is a debt trap, because it's going to be extremely difficult for central banks to raise those rates. And we're also in an environment where wages are ramping higher. Now, we've had lots of examples of social unrest, and it has been right across the social spectrum. So we've had truck drivers and large protests in places like Melbourne in Australia. We've had these draconian abortion laws passed in Texas and protests against that right across the country. But then there have been also these episodes of civil unrest in schools where children have been destroying school property in a trend that's been referred to as a devious lick. And then they're posting their trophies online, which are often pieces of the school bathrooms. So these are all protest movements, and they've found their way into the media. But then what seems to be largely ignored is that there are millions of people who did everything right and went to work and accepted whatever wages were offered and did their best in an extraordinarily difficult time, and they feel underappreciated and they feel like they're worth more. And most particularly, they feel like they're worth more because people were earning more than them for doing nothing at all. So that then increases the potential that people are going to ask for more money. And against all that background, we know that the cost of servicing the debt is about 500 billion a year, excuse me, is about 500 billion a year, and it is trending higher. One thing that everyone is probably aware of at this stage is that the cost of servicing debt, in fact, contracted in 2020. And that's particularly true for countries like the UK. But when we think about it in terms of the USA, it's most relevant because the duration of the debt is so short. And it did contract in 2020, but it contracted from an all-time high. So it's more than likely that if bond yields continue higher, then the cost of servicing the debt is only going to increase. And it's going to increase by significant sums. Well, one thing that I think is also interesting is when we think about what's going on in Bitcoin, because we've had a lot of volatile activity in just the last month. Last month, we had rumors circulating that Tether had been buying commercial paper from China Evergrande and had been boosting their returns in that fashion. And then, of course, the company went bust. So that contributed to Bitcoin pulling back rather violently. Well, then we had these big infusions of money that were made in a very public manner at the beginning of October, 1.6 billion in the space of minutes, and that was bought on exchange, which was a very public, splashy way of highlighting that somebody was buying in size. And you would only do that if you want to try and manipulate the market higher. But there is the corollary that it might also have been in an effort to rescue Tether and to ensure that there is plenty of additional new liquidity that's coming through into that stable coin. So we're in an interesting environment because if Tether is in fact a Ponzi scheme, and we won't know until the sector is regulated like a money market fund and we know exactly what they're investing in. But if it is a Ponzi scheme, well, Ponzi schemes don't fail until the liquidity runs out. So the one thing to pay particular attention to is that these kinds of stable coins are vehicles for leverage, and they pump money into the system. And the party goes on for as long as they can continue to pump money into the system. It's only when they no longer have access to funding, and they no longer have the availability of additional funds to support the network, that they collapse. So we're in an interesting environment for Bitcoin because it has broken above the high from early September, and it does look likely that the peak around 60,000 will be retested. But in order to sustain moves up and out of this range, then it can't just be parasitic on the rest of the crypto sector and siphoning funds away from from the altcoins. It also needs to be able to attract additional funds from other asset classes. And relying on very opaque sources of liquidity, well, that's not a sustainable business model when you have the threat of regulation. So we're increasingly seeing or getting knowledge about just what it means to be unregulated, and what does it mean in terms of the efficacy or the truth of how various claims are backed up. And as regulation starts to come, then we're likely to see additional questions being answered. Now, if we go back then and think about what's going on in the rest of the world, well, Japan had a significant earthquake in Tokyo today, and the Nikkei has been down in a heavy manner for two consecutive weeks. Now, we're starting to see support coming through in a whole range of other markets. So maybe it's reasonable to anticipate that Japan will also start to bounce in here. The currency pair that I find most interesting right now is the yen versus the dollar, because the dollar looks like it has first step above the base characteristics. It's been ranging above the trend mean now for most of the year. The last time we saw anything even like remotely like this was in 2018, but on this occasion we're pushing up and out of this range. So it's looking increasingly likely that the yen is going to devalue further, and that should act as a support for the nominal price of Japanese assets. And the second section index has also pulled back into the range, but it is steadying from the region of the trend mean. So again, this is an area which should begin to offer support. Australia is its current account surplus. It has been surging this year, and the ASX 200 is also firming from the region of the trend mean. The Eurostoxx index is also firming from the region of the trend mean. Of course, no other region in the world has quite as many banks as the Eurozone, so it's perhaps not all that surprising that that KBW Global Bank Index doesn't look all that different from the European Banking Index, other than the fact that it is a lot lower down, but still has this very lengthy base overall. So US banks have been outperforming, European banks have been underperforming, and on aggregate, the sector has been going sideways for a decade. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.